would have been a haunting, amazing, emotive photo. And in that second, I thought, do I or do I not take this photo? I decided not to.
The saying goes that a picture can tell a thousand words. Well, if it's a football picture taken by Michael Wilson, there are times that that photo can tell 10,000. The man responsible for some of the AFL's most iconic still images takes us behind the lens of snapping Taylor Harris in full flight, of Mitch Clark being consoled by his coach, and of an emotional moment he refused to photograph. And he also reveals a surprising name as his favourite player to snap. And joining us on In The Game today is one of the all-time great sports photographers, Michael Wilson. Michael, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, Dave, mate.
In a world where everyone has become a photographer and everyone wants a selfie, it must be, for a professional photographer, quite reassuring to know that there is still a place in this modern world for a well-taken still photo.
It is reassuring to know. You're correct. Everyone is a photographer these days with obviously with our phones, built-in cameras everywhere. I guess the thing with sports photography is to get those great shots, you actually need the proper gear, you know, to get great action shots. You need the telephoto lens and a proper body and all that kind of stuff. So people aren't going to get those great sports shots with their phones, which, you know, I guess is where sports photographers are lucky in that, you know, our photos stand out from just your smartphone photos. So I think, yeah, moving forward, I don't see that changing. I don't think they're ever going to be able to come up with a phone that's going to be able to zoom in enough or take those classic action shots that we're fortunate enough to get.
Yep. In your world, though, have you been forced to react and change your ways as a result of the mobile phone usage, which is now obviously common, but in your career at one stage it would have been, I'd imagine, quite confronting?
Yeah, I think when social media and phones were really sort of coming into play, probably, I don't know, the early mid to late 2000s when, you know,
it took off.
Yeah, it really took off.
Yeah.
Photographers were a little bit taken aback by, you know, the flood of photos that were available now for people to view. But you've just really, as with all things in life, embrace it. Yep. And just roll with it. And for me personally, especially Instagram, it's been a great tool for me to get my photos out there. So, yeah, like I said, you just got to roll with it, embrace it, and just move with the times. Yeah.
Yeah. Every industry is forced to change. Do you feel that you're one with this advent of the mobile telephone / camera has forced you as a photographer to change more than even some other industries, which have obviously gone through a major upheaval?
In a way, I guess it's kind of forced us to produce more imagery in a way to be able to populate these social channels. That's one thing I have noticed from when I started. You know, you'd shoot a match, you'd be lucky to get 20 pictures onto the AFL Photos website by the end of the game. Now we're expected to have 80, 90, 100,
really?
100 pictures.
Just to feed that beast.
Just to feed the AFL news desk, the AFL social channels, the club social channels. So the demand in images, I would say, has definitely increased. And I think that's where I've noticed it the most.
Yeah. I might talk about some of the specifics of actually distributing those photos during the game while you've still got an eye on the game. But one of the bigger headline stories out of the AFLW season was your photograph of Taylor Harris, Carlton footballer, in the preliminary final. Iconic sports photograph, great imagery, great sports photograph. There's a major backstory to it, isn't it? And not all of it ended up being savoury despite you taking a sports photograph.
Yeah, there is a funny story to that photo. Taylor, before the match, was warming up and she came up to me just to say good day. She often just sort of walks around the boundary and says hello to photographers during matches. So, she came up to me before the match and she, as most people know, she's had her goal-kicking issues this season. She's been a little bit inaccurate or was inaccurate during the season. So she said to me before the game, just with my first kick today, I'm just going to give it everything. I think, you know, she's just going to let the shackles off and just do her natural kicking style. So sure enough, she marked the ball within the first couple of minutes. And I remember her saying it to me. I, regardless of whether she came up to me before the match, I would have definitely have shot that kick anyway.
Sure.
And any Taylor Harris kick you always shoot just because she's got that very unique style, that amazing leg extension. But I made sure I was in a good position for that first kick and shot the whole sequence. And, yeah, sure enough, it went straight through the middle of the goals. Her follow-through, as you can see in the photos, extraordinary. Just her elevation off the ground. The leg extension, her foot's higher than her head. It's just an amazing action and consequently produced an amazing photo and went on to have take on more significance than just the photo itself. It started conversations and I guess...
And not all those good conversations, were they?
No, not at
all.
Because
it might have been Exhibit A of what is an iconic sports photograph, but it also became Exhibit A of what's bad about society, didn't it?
Absolutely. You know, all the derogatory comments it attracted and the negative feedback, I guess in a way it was highlighted by the fact that Channel 7 decided to delete the post, and that's kind of what kickstarted the whole movement. People didn't think Channel 7 should have taken a backwards step.
Did you think they should have?
I thought they made an error in removing the image, yeah.
So did I, for what it's worth. When it was accompanied with a statement from the network, and we understand how these things happen, and sometimes the decisions are made without proper thought. But I just felt at that moment, Michael, and I'm really keen to get your thoughts given it was your photo. I thought that was then going to elevate it to, unfortunately, the levels of unsavouriness that it did.
Yeah.
Is that the way you saw it as the person who took the photo?
Definitely, yeah. It's once Channel 7 highlighted the fact that they were going to remove it and that it was just attracting too many derogatory comments, I thought then and there people would start reposting the image, and it became viral after that.
And it happened immediately, didn't it? I think Taylor herself posted it to put it back up out into the landscape, didn't she? Is that
Yeah, not long after Channel 7 removed it, she did post that image with, I think it was, the caption was, "This is me in my workplace," you know. There was something else that went with it. And it just gained traction from there. Just everyone came together in the Twitter sphere and on Instagram and just reposted the image, and it ended up being picked up by CNN and New York Post and the Irish Times and all these people.
Politicians just got involved in that.
Yeah, Scott Morrison commented on it. It was I've never seen anything like it. It was crazy.
And tell me, you would have been proud of the shot when you took it and published it?
Yeah, when I first took the shot, I didn't think anything more of it than it being a great action photo. So I was proud of the fact that it was a great sports shot. I guess now, given the commentary around it, I'm more proud of the fact that it started these conversations and we're seeing people standing up to these trolls now, these online bullies. Like, you know, Dane Beams the other week mentioned that he now takes the time out to confront these guys and try and educate them online. There's just been a whole movement collectively, I think, the AFL community standing up to these bullies, and I can't help but think this photo had something to do with that, and that makes me really proud.
It beggars belief, I think, to most normal people, and I say that with respect, but that people could have found the need, want, desire to make such comments they did about, as you rightly point out, is just, in my eyes as well, an iconic sports image.
Yeah, I guess people are heroes behind their keyboards, aren't they? They just think they can say anything. I think more and more we're seeing now people are being held to account for what they say online. And I think, you know, the more technology evolves, the more the anonymity will disappear with what people say online. So I think it's a great thing that people are being held to account for what they say, you know, in these forums, online, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere.
Michael, just take us back to the mechanics of a photo like the Taylor Harris shot. You've mentioned there that you had an insight into the possibility that it was going to be a powerful use of the kicking motion. So you had an insight on that. But when you line that shot up, and you hit that button. In the old days, it was old film, so it would have been one or two clicks, I'd imagine. How many times is your camera, in inverted commas, clicking in that particular moment?
Yeah, so the camera I have, it's a Canon 1DX Mark II, and it's capable of 12 frames per second. So that sequence, I think I shot maybe 10 frames. So I basically held the shutter down. I think my shutter speed was at maybe 2/1000th of a second, freezing the motion. So I got 10 frames of basically her lead up, her kick and follow through, and I picked the best one where she was at her highest point. But there are about 9 other frames either side of that frame that I chose that are part of the sequence.
Yeah. And is that pretty much a regular occurrence? You're holding it down for that long. Most times you see something that you think might be worthy of capture?
With something like a high mark, if you get a sense for, you know, being a specky, you definitely hold the button down and try and fire off as many frames as you can, hope they're all in focus. General play, you probably, I don't know, if there's just a one-on-one contest, you might fire off 4 or 5 in a sequence. It's rare that you would probably have 10 frames in a sequence. Like I said, I with the Taylor picture, I knew she was going to give that kick everything. So yeah. I just made sure I had as many frames as possible of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got your favourite players?
Favourite players?
Favourite sports people?
Yeah.
When it comes to taking the photo?
I've always said that Easton Wood is my favourite player to photograph. He's obviously a good-looking fella. He's courageous. He's skillful. He takes high marks. And he's a captain. He's just got the whole package as far as a photographer's perspective. I guess the other side of that is as well, Jeremy Howe's also a great player to photograph. Any match with Jeremy Howe in it, photographers get excited because you know there's going to be probably 3 or 4 times he's going to attempt Mark of the Year. So you're always after that shot. But I would say generally Easton Wood is just, he just photographs well and he's a dynamic player. All the action shots I have of him are always very dynamic.
Yeah. Obviously, we're talking about the imagery as per the match condition. There's obviously still photographs you take outside of the game. You obviously need to get the trust of the people you photograph.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of my favourite photos have been shot in inner sanctums, you know, behind closed doors. So I'm really fortunate in that I've got great relationships with clubs and players that I've built up over the years to kind of gain that trust and get access to those areas. And it takes years to build up those relationships. Hawthorn in particular, I was very close with during their premiership years. They invited me into their inner sanctum for the whole week leading up to their grand finals.
All three?
It was 20.
It was four, wasn't it? Four grand finals.
Yeah, no, it was the last two, so 2015 and 2014. I was out at Waverley covering their whole week and the lead up in some of their meetings and all that kind of stuff. So I guess over time you just build up a reputation of, not being an idiot when you're in these inner sanctums, knowing that the players can trust you and being discreet, I think, is a massive part of it. I think I've learned over the years when to take photos and where to position myself so that I'm not being noticed, and you just want to get the players, the coaches and all that kind of stuff in their natural environment without them knowing that you're there. So,
is there a silencer on the click, so to speak?
No, there's not.
So when you say discreet, it doesn't marry up, does it?
No. Well, it's funny. The shutter does make a noise, which some people notice, some don't. It's funny. The new wave of technology with cameras is mirrorless. Which means the cameras don't have a mirror, which means it won't make that shutter noise. So moving forward, I think a lot of cameras will become mirrorless, which means they won't make any sort of noise at all when you fire them. So I guess in a way that could potentially open up even new avenues to those inner sanctums where you're completely silent and completely oblivious to the subjects.
Yeah. Have you either breached or been accused of breaching the trust that is so important to your job?
No, I haven't. It's a really fine line though. I've wrestled a few times with a decision to take a photo or to not take a photo, knowing what consequences taking a photo inappropriately could mean.
I suppose you've got that decision and then you've got the ultimate decision to publish, haven't you?
So exactly.
Do you wrestle with the actual act of taking it before you get...
Sometimes I do. One example where I didn't take a photo was back in 2015 during grand final week at Hawthorn. Billy Hartung had just been told he'd missed out on the grand final side. This was like on the Thursday afternoon or something. And I saw him in the locker room just after he'd been told on his own, crying, head in hands. And it would have been a haunting, amazing, emotive photo. And in that second, I thought, do I or do I not take this photo? I decided not to because, like you said, you could hear the shudder of the camera. He was already upset. He didn't need to be more upset. So that's one example where I think I made the right decision in not taking that photo. As amazing as the photo would have been, I probably would have breached my trust and been kicked out of Waverley after that. But you're right. There is taking the photo, that decision, and then deciding whether to publish it or not. An example of me wrestling with that decision was the Mitch Clark photo that a lot of people would know.
Yep.
I took that photo and went back to the photographer's room afterwards and looked at it on my laptop and wrestled with the decision of whether I should publish that one, knowing that it was probably a private moment. But I ended up deciding to publish it, given I think the emotion in the photo and the level of support and understanding that was evident in that photo.
From his coach, Chris Scott, who, yeah, for those who aren't familiar with it, as you mentioned, I'm sure now we describe it and they can see it online, that the walking down the corridors at the MCG, I believe it was, Michael,
yep,
right arm of Chris Scott around the shoulder of Mitch Clark, who had publicly at that stage dealing with serious mental health issues.
Yeah, it was at the MCG. It was around 5 or 6, 2015, I think. Geelong had just had a great win over Collingwood. All the players were ecstatic. And they were all walking off the ground, high fives everywhere, smiles everywhere. And I noticed Mitch Clark was in tears. And like you said, he's had a well-publicised battle with mental health. So I just kept my eye on him and sort of trailed the players down the race. And just as soon as we got into the rooms, I noticed all the players went into the main area to sing the song. And I noticed Mitch trailing off to the right with Chris Scott, and I thought, oh, something's not right here. Something's really amiss. I kept my distance and noticed them walking down towards this corridor. It's a funny photo. They're sort of walking to nowhere. It's a very eerie kind of feeling to it. And that's when Chris Scott put his arm around him, and such a simple gesture, but I think it shows so much that, you know, the compassion, the understanding and the support that there is there for players now struggling with their mental health.
Whereas, I've got your back, literally, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, even 5 or 6 years before that, a player would have had strips torn off him by a coach for shedding a tear after a match. Like, can you imagine Lee Matthews walking Chris Scott down that? It just wouldn't have happened. Mm. Lee Matthews.
Get over it.
Exactly. Harden up, you know. Don't be soft.
So you took that and you published that night?
I did, yeah.
Within the normal deadlines you've got and yep, guidelines time-wise?
I did. I published it that night.
But you wrestled with before you hit send?
Yeah.
And did you wrestle with it after you hit send?
I did. I felt because it got picked up by Channel 7 straight away. They showed it at the end of their broadcast and they showed the still photo. It was a major talking point on Talkback Radio the next morning. It got published in the newspapers. It was like, you know, is Mitch Clark ever going to play again? Are we ever going to see him again? Is he okay? So I kind of knew the ramifications of publishing that photo, what might come of it. And I did reach out to Mitch a couple of days after I published it and in a way apologise for highlighting it and for the unwanted attention that it brought onto him.
So it's that uncomfortably with you after
it did. I probably underestimated the amount of coverage that it got. I think I didn't comprehend how big of a talking point it would be. But after the initial sort of feedback and digesting of that image, I guess the main thing that came out of that photo was the conversation started about mental health in the AFL landscape. And, you know, now we're seeing players, you know, like Tom Boyd and Jack Stephen and Aaron Francis, these guys putting their hand up and saying, I'm going to miss football because I've got issues with my mental health. And I can't help but think that photo had something to do with players feeling comfortable about coming out and being honest with where they're at mentally. So, no, I did struggle a little bit after that. I felt guilt in a way for highlighting Mitch and bringing attention to Mitch when I know that, you know, he probably wanted to shy away from that, from it being highlighted. But in fairness to him, he got back to me a few days later probably and said, "All good, mate." And he's actually since posted that photo numerous times. So I feel vindicated in taking it and publishing it ultimately.
Yeah. He being a photographer himself too in his many pursuits.
Yeah, he's moved back to Perth, and yeah, I think he's doing okay. He's trying to crack into the photography. It's more of an artistic style, his photography, a lot of portraiture and that kind of stuff. So yeah, wish him all the best. And you know, we still text very occasionally, just touching base, seeing how he's going. And yeah, I think he's going okay, which is good to hear.
What are your favourite photos?
Well, I get asked this a lot, and it's like trying to choose your favourite child, really. It's
is that important?
To me, it is, yeah. It really changes. Like, I would say probably the last couple of seasons, there's a photo I took of Bucks, one of your friends, don't they?
Nate, we're okay, I think.
Oh, actually, no, Bucks, you're okay with you. Sorry, I got kind of confused with Hodgie.
Oh, great, yeah.
Yeah, I took a photo of Bucks with his son Jet, I think it is, after the preliminary final last season.
Yep.
There's vision of him.
Coming off the ground?
No, in the rooms.
In the rooms, yeah, coming off the ground into the rooms. Yeah.
Into the rooms.
And he runs into his arms.
Yeah, jumps right into his arms. Yep. It's a really, it's just a great shot of a father and a son just enjoying that moment. I think, yeah, just you can see the excitement in Bucks's face, the relief. You know, they're heading to a grand final. That's probably one of my favourite photos from the last couple of seasons. Action-wise, I would say Charlie Curnow's mark over Tom Langdon in the match against Collingwood last year. It was referred to as a it was almost the same position on the field as a Jezelenko mark, same teams, and very similar sort of action, I guess. So from an action perspective, that's probably one of my favourite photos from the last couple of years. But, yeah, it really changes and evolves. I don't have one particular favourite photo that I can narrow it down to, I don't think.
And is the question, as I just asked, what's your favourite photo, is that a different answer if I ask you what's your best photo?
I think they're probably the same.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, I think – you know, you can go into the technicalities of how a photo was taken and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, best, favourite, I think they're pretty much the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
You mentioned before about refusing or refraining from taking the one of Billy Hartung. I dare say, without knowing, that you might have missed a couple on the ground that you're going to regret.
Yes, I have. Probably the most famous one, and I've mentioned this before, the Jeremy Howe mark.
Which one?
Yeah, that was the one against Melbourne. It was Queen's birthday 2 years ago, I think. Yep. On Tom McDonald's head, he's on the members wing there. Yeah, so that was the big freeze game, and I was at the time that mark was being taken, editing and filing my big freeze pictures, the slide pictures.
Right.
We had some clients that needed those pictures urgently. So I had my head in my laptop when that mark was being taken, unfortunately. And
so you hear the roar?
Heard the roar, saw the mark and saw the photo, and went to a very dark place for a few hours, I can tell you that.
Can't imagine.
That's probably one of the bigger moments that I have missed. It happens though. There's so many variables that come into play when you're shooting on the ground. There's so much interference, so many players running in front of you, umpires, water carriers. A lot of it is luck of the draw, mate. It's right place, right time. Fortunately, I've been in the right place, the right time more often than not. But there's some times when you just, no matter where you are, you're going to miss it. Yeah, after the Jeremy Howe thing, I've been a lot more diligent with when I file during a match. So try to avoid having my head in the laptop so much so that at least I'm a chance to get those shots.
Yep. You mentioned my mate before, Luke Hodge. You've got, a story to tell about him and his early days at Hawthorn.
Yeah, for about the first 3 years of his career, I called him Brad. as in the cricketer, Brad Hodge. So I think he was too polite to pull me up on until I think I was doing a membership shoot at Hawthorn one day, and he just politely corrected me and goes, hey, mate, my name's actually Luke. So I made sure I call him Luke from now on.
He could have called you a knob.
Could have called me a knob. Could have been worse.
Also, two of us have been told to ask you about a Sydney Football Club team photo session one year.
Yeah, so I think it was 2 years ago. My former colleague, Adam Trafford, who was a photographer here at the AFL, and I were up in Sydney doing their team photo. And I was behind the camera about to take the shot, and I noticed Robbie Fox, who was in the back row, just needed to move to his left a little bit. So I told Traff, who was up near the team, I just said, can you get Robbie Fox to just move to the left a little bit? So Traff's gone up to Robbie Fox, and he's in the back row. I just said, Robbie, we just need you to move left a little bit. And he wasn't getting much of a reaction. He's saying, Robbie, he's getting a little bit more frustrated. Just need you to move to the left a little bit. Robbie Fox was actually sitting in the front row. The person we needed to move was Dean Towers. So once the players caught wind that we were sort of had Dean and Robbie confused, the whole playing group broke out into laughter, and it's quite a funny scene. I think even John Longmire had a bit of a giggle with that one. But Dean Towers actually got delisted at the end of the season. Hope we had nothing to do with it. But it's a funny little anecdote there.
What is your full kit cost, if I was to ask you dollar wise right now, with the equipment you use on a regular basis?
You're probably looking at around $50,000. So
the camera itself is roughly?
They're about $7,000. So got two of those, two Canon 1DX Mark IIs. Got a telephoto lens, a 600mm telephoto lens, which is worth about $14,000, 70-200mm zoom. 24-70mm zoom and a 16-35 wide angle with a couple of flashes and memory cards and all that kind of stuff. So you probably
and lights, so to speak.
Yeah, so flashes they're sort of separate. They're probably about $2,000 per head. We've got about six or seven of those in our kit here. So it's definitely not cheap.
No. And does it date with technology?
It does. Yeah, definitely the cameras. Every couple of years, Canon tends to bring out a new body, which is quicker, faster, better at handling low light. So we update when we can. The lenses tend to hold their value okay, and we sort of get a little bit more longevity out of them. But the cameras we try to update them whenever a new model comes out.
Yep, this is a real layman's question. Best conditions to shoot in?
For me personally, the MCG on a sunny day.
Often you hear cloudy days better.
Well, it all depends on what angle you're shooting from. So on a sunny day, I'll shoot what we call backlit, where the sun is behind the play. So that would mean me sitting on the southern stand side towards the punt road end. So you just get that nice little sort of rim lighting around the players. That can make for some really, really lovely light and photos. Overcast is probably, preferable for when you just – it's easy to shoot in that you don't have to deal with shadows and that kind of stuff. I would say probably the worst conditions to shoot in would be Marvel Stadium – I probably shouldn't say this, but Marvel Stadium at night. The light is really low. It's – the white balance is in – the tone of the light is very greeny red, so it takes a lot of correction.
It's being remodeled. You could have a say in how the lighting appears from here on in.
Yeah, I'll just go up and check the guild.
You've seen enough here at the
AFL. it's very dim sort of stadium. It's I would say shooting at night at Marvel's probably my least preferred conditions for shooting.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was only in the early 90s, really, or maybe even mid-90s, that newspapers became coloured, so to speak, on a regular basis. So in your lifetime as a photographer, you've dealt with that. The power of a black and white shot, though, it's still there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's certain pictures lend themselves to black and white. I think you've got to be selective with what you convert to black and white now. For me, it's more emotive photos, I would say, that are helped out by being in black and white.
You shoot it in colour and then just convert it. Is that how?
Always shoot in colour, and then convert to black and white in post production.
And just on that, and look, we hopefully will run some overlay of what we've talked about today, with the Mitch Clark photograph being one of those. And that photo in colour is powerful, but I would, again, to my untrained eye, even looking at it in black and white, it's 100 times more powerful in black and white.
Yeah, absolutely. It's undefinable, really, what black and white can lend to a photo. I think it just takes people back in time a little bit, and it just has a bit more of a nostalgic kind of feel to it. So definitely certain pictures, I think, are enhanced by being converted to black and white, and the Mitch Clark one, I think, is definitely one of those.
Yep. Yeah. You've had two books published under your name?
Yes. So in 2016, they were both a brainchild of Jeff Slattery, the publisher. 2016, Up Close was just a collection of my best photos from the whole season, climaxing in the Western Bulldogs Premiership. I think it's in the $5 bin now. But and last year there was a Cyril Rioli book, which had all my photos right from the start of his career through to his last match. A lot of those photos were Inner Sanctum stuff during the grand final years as well. So still in the bookstores, that one. I saw it the other day at Dimmick's. So do yourself a favour and get a copy.
It's a competitive industry, your one, as every media facet is. Egos at play in the photographic world?
Oh, there's always politics and, no one will admit to it, but everyone's out there to knock everyone off. Everyone wants to be the best. It's a competitive kind of industry. But generally, I think all the photographers that I work with, we all get along really well. We're all we're all photography enthusiasts at the end of the day. We love to see great photos no matter who takes them. Personally, I don't get involved in the politics or the competition of it. I just try to, row my own boat, I guess, and just try and just shoot what I see and don't get involved in the whole noise outside of my four walls, I guess. So, yeah.
And you jostle for position, particularly on a day like a grand final day at the MCG?
I've got my preferred position. Grand final day is a bit of a funny one in that we've got 10 photographers on the ground, so we sort of position where guys will be sitting well before the match.
When you say we, this is your organisation and the people you oversee. So when you say 10, how many would be on the ground full stop?
So we'd have 8 on the ground on grand final day.
And how many in total from other organisations?
I think the Herald Sun would probably have 5 or 6, probably a few less. Getty Images and AAP are only allowed one accreditation per match, so they've only got one there. When I say we, I mean AFL Photos. Last grand final day, I think we had 10, 8 on the ground, 2 up high. And I was managing those photographers. I was in charge of allocating the brief. We had a massive brief. It involved requests from corporate partners, clubs, AFL sponsors, everyone. It was huge. So a lot of groundwork there with my photo manager, Celia Drummond, who helped put together the brief and a lot of meetings and a lot of just allocating photographers to certain parts of the brief. And then, of course, you go through the positioning and we met at like 7 a.m. grand final day. All the photographers, we had breakfast together, went through the brief, positioning, and just the plan of attack for the day. So it's a massive day. There were thousands of photos at the end of it, some great stuff there. And the coverage was world class. It's up there with Super Bowl coverage and that kind of stuff. Mm. So, it's always an intense day, but at the end of the day, when you see your photos out there, see the great stuff there, it's all worth it.
And obviously, just hearing you say thousands of photographs, and there would have been from that one day, a lot obviously hits the cutting room floor, never to see light of day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my average match, I'd probably shoot somewhere around 2,000 photos, whittle it down to my best 100 or so that would probably get sent to the AFL photo site, and then from there probably choose my best 2 or 3 to put on Instagram and Twitter. So, yeah, I guess with digital photography, we've got the luxury of being able to shoot as much as we want.
And then move on.
And then move on and just be selective and choose your best from there. Yeah.
Well, Michael Wilson, thank you today for taking us into the world of one of the elite sports photographers.
Thanks, Damo. Thanks for having me.